thank you for allowing me to stand behind this podium officially and talk with all of you. Many of you know me. I think most of you know me. I think most of you don't know me very well. And I thought it might be useful to start first by saying a little bit about who I am and how I come to this conversation. I hope you had a chance to look at the paper that I prepared and the papers that Richard and David and Nick prepared. I just found them, with the possible exception of my own, really outstanding and very educational. So I'm going to start with saying a little bit about myself. I have spent, up until the past 4 or 5 months, about 25 years in the field of public education reform in different guises. And it was probably only in the last 7 or 8 that I became really passionate about arts education. I was involved in a large-scale movement to decentralize the Chicago public schools, which many of my Chicago old friends probably remember back in the late 80s. It was called school reform, and now there are many other guises of school reform around the country at the time. So it was a really important governance reform, and it involved coalition building, community organizing, and so forth. It involved putting together partnerships between business, unions, and community groups to make it happen. It's a really significant kind of reform. But the arts were not in the picture of that particular reform. I then went on to do some work in the Bay Area with a number of school districts, looking at the kind of curricula that they were putting together, looking at some school reform models of the 90s, like accelerated schools that they were trying to put in place, which is really in vogue. And again, although we talked about powerful learning experiences and so forth and the accelerated schools model, the arts were not in the picture. I came to the Ford Foundation. I was hired to develop collaborative programs between outside organizations like advocates, community organizations, the business community, and insiders, having had these two types of experiences. And for the first few years, the arts weren't in the picture of my work. What began to change all of this for me were relationships that I began to have with people, in particular, two folks, Margaret Wilkerson, who is our director of media arts and culture at Ford, who came to be a good friend of mine as well. And she asked me to do one thing, just be open-minded about arts education. And to go and look at some schools where integrated arts education, where strong discipline-based arts education programs were underway, and see for myself what I thought. And I began to do that. And it was at that point the seeing is believing kind of phenomenon kind of took over for me. And I began to understand how the arts were deeply connected to purposes of schooling that really mattered to me. Two purposes of schooling in particular. One is around how schooling can level the playing field for children, and that means how we can make our urban public schools much better than they already are. So equity becomes sort of coupled with quality. And I began to see how the arts deeply engage students in learning in ways that I wasn't seeing in most public schools, particularly in cities. And secondly, I began to see, and I talk about this a bit in the paper, the democracy-enhancing principles of the arts, the way that the arts allow for people to represent and express what's important to them. And so I began to realize that, in fact, my ambitions for school reform could be realized in part through the arts. The second person who really sort of influenced me, interestingly enough, was Gigi Antony, and I know a number of you know her. She's the director of Big Thought in Dallas. And Gigi did something that we as funders typically don't see very often. She came to the Ford Foundation without an appointment, but with a deputy mayor, with an associate superintendent of schools, with a little entourage, I suppose, of leaders from Dallas, and had our security people call up to the education program to see if anybody would talk with her. And I had heard about the work that Dallas was doing. I didn't really believe it. I didn't believe that they were already achieving the kind of scale that they said they had. And again, having a bit of an open mind, I said, I've got an hour to kill. Let me deal with these Dallas people and get them out of my hair. And very quickly, they blew me away. I began to see how they were beginning to integrate the arts, not just into classrooms, but into the fabric and the thinking about public education in school and after school programs in this very, very large city. That in fact, with the right kind of nascent movement, if you will, it was possible to actually bring about arts education at scale. It remains very fragile, even in Dallas, as Daniel will probably tell us at some point, but nonetheless, it began to speak to the possibility that arts education really could become something that was central to education. Finally, my interest in arts education in recent years has really been fueled by my son. He has been studying with a graffiti artist for the past 4 or 5 years, and he has many passions in life. He's a very independent thinker. I think his greatest flaw is that he's a serious hardhead, and I worry what's going to happen to him when he gets older if he doesn't start to listen to people, particularly his parents. But he also has amazing gifts, and among his gifts are that he's an incredible athlete, he's very skilled in math and so forth. But his deep passion, the thing that he picks up all the time now, is his drawing pencils. And it has to do with the experience that he's had with this arts teacher that has given him a certain kind of focus that I've never seen him have in any other way. And his art is nice. I don't think he's a genius, although this teacher makes him feel like a genius and makes all of the children feel like geniuses. But it has given him a certain kind of focus that I think will be really, really important in his future life. So with that background, and hopefully that gives you a little flavor for who I am and what I think about, I'd like to just comment on a few of the points that I raised in the paper. I hope you had a chance to read it. There are three significant, I think, points that I try to raise in this paper that are particularly relevant to funders. The first point is that the problem of strengthening the arts in schools is principally, to my mind, a cultural one. It's a cultural and normative problem. It's not a problem of do we have the data, do we have the research, etc. To my mind, it's largely about whether or not the arts are really seen as central to what makes for a good education. They are seen in our consciousness, in our beliefs, in our norms, and so forth. And I think we struggle to have the arts more centrally located within our belief system about what quality education is. And the way I try to exemplify that in the paper is through this idea of core purposes of schooling. And I examine two core purposes, economic prosperity, and I guess what we would call social reproduction. This function of schools to create a certain kind of continuity in life. And the arts bump up against both of those in some profound ways. And we as funders, we experience this problem of cultural reform that we're trying to accomplish in a lot of our work, particularly those of us who are concerned with social justice issues. We experience this problem of cultural reform a lot, but we don't know how to deal with it. We really don't know how to deal with it well. So we try to frame it in particular ways. We might see framing around rights. We might see approaches that focus on communications, that try to repackage or re-message things. We think about public policy that creates the kind of blunt instrument that forces people to do things the right way. And yet in a lot of cases, even if we do get a policy passed, it's ephemeral, it doesn't last, it's not strong enough, It's not sustained, and the behavior continues. And I think we're seeing that in this particular moment in time with arts education. As we see these enormous funding cuts, everybody speaks about the arts as a place to cut right away. It comes to people's first, the first place that people look to oftentimes in school district budgets are the arts. And so how do we begin to think more intentionally about cultural change in our strategies as funders? How do we begin to enter into this question of how we shift norms and beliefs? And I think that is, that's a real challenge for us as funders. I don't think we have easy answers. And I would put on the table that it would be useful to inquire about this problem. My second point in the paper begins to suggest, I suppose, a bit of a strategic analysis to address this problem. First off, I think it's useful, and I think Nick begins to allude to it in his paper, that we look back across history. We look back at the sort of broad swath of where the arts have been in our schools. And Nick, I think those two charts that you put forward were extremely helpful. You know, we see about 100 years ago that only 20% of children had arts education in the schools. And I think this is sort of consistent with my argument, as the economy, the U.S. economy, really exploded after the Great Depression, and resources were more plentiful, and equity concerns came much more to the forefront, we saw this enormous spike. It only reached, though, I think, what, 60-65%, is that right? Yeah. And then, from 1980 on, we've seen this decline, steady decline, despite the fact that the economy has had lots of ups and downs. In particular, up until 3 or 4 years ago, we were on a pretty steady up for a period of about 10 years, 10 to 15 years. So it's interesting that even during that moment, the arts were still declining. My point is, it's very useful to try to understand what are the reasons for these broad sort of historical trends. I suggest in my paper that this question of purposes is a way to begin to understand some of this problem. But it's only illustrative, and I think we would do well to do a deeper historical analysis. Secondly, we are, I think, and I allude to this in the paper as well, I think really in a moment of crisis in our society. It's a crisis not only of economic proportions, which are evident to all of us, but it's a crisis of what our society and our economy, I suppose, is going to be in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years. As we see the forces of globalization, one of the important forces of globalization has led to this incredible diversity that we see in our society. As we see a change in the basic structure of our economy, and we see, as a number of the papers pointed out too, this question of how new technologies are really evolving the way that we work, we think, etc. Just the mere fact that we have to ask ourselves, should we turn off our BlackBerries before we have a conversation and debate about that for a moment or two is sort of illustrative of this. But we are at, and I think I kind of call it a slow burn crisis, where we don't really know what to do with all of this stuff, and we're seeing it evident in our schools. And so the question to my mind is, given this historical context, where might we enter in to a redefinition of public education that is beginning to happen a bit, okay? Where potentially might the arts get it on the ground floor of some of this redefinition? And I talk about a couple of ideas in the paper. First, we're seeing this nascent movement around extending the school day, extending the school year. The arts historically, in the last 20, 30 years, have begun to find real purchase and community-based programs. Is there an opportunity, both for integration and discipline-based arts, that does remain in school, and what we're seeing out of school, to begin to think about a way of talking about the arts as foundational to this new conception of a different kind of school day, a different kind of time in learning for children? And we're beginning to see some of that happen now, I think, with Big Thought and with some of the other projects that we supported at Ford over the years in Alameda County, in Minneapolis, in Cleveland, and so forth. The third point that I bring up in my paper, and again, these ideas I think are found in the other papers as well, is this question of how school reform itself happens. And how do we actually bring about change in schools? And again, I think history is a very powerful guide to our understanding of this. As we were having conversations of the planning committee, I guess the one conversation, I shouldn't say conversations, the one that I was in, I mentioned to Richard and Janet that it would be wonderful to have a person like a David Tyack or a Larry Cuban, the educational historians that I know, in this conversation, because I think that they really help us to understand this technology of school reform and what it takes. And in the work that I've done at Ford, I have really tried to articulate that technology of school reform. In short, the new education director at Ford, Jeannie Oakes, defines it in a very clear and concise way, powerful people and powerful ideas, you know, and that's principally the combination that's needed. In the paper, I begin to speak about both of these, the powerful ideas potentially and the places where the arts might enter into those powerful ideas, but also this question of how do we begin to build the coalitions, how do we begin to build what I think and what I would like to propose right now is the beginnings of a movement for arts education, and what does it really take? We look at the accountability movement, the current accountability movement. It's been going strong for 30 years, and you know what? It's still going strong. This whole notion of accountability now is seen as part of how we think about public education. It's not a question of do we have accountability or don't we? It's a question of what does it look like? And I think that's the kind of place we want to get to with the arts. So how do we begin to build this movement for arts education? What's needed for it? And certainly one area that I think we need to explore is this question of unlikely allies and supporters. And one area I felt that we didn't really get to in our Ford-supported work is looking at ways to engage the business community, where their interests might be at stake, ways to engage, and you know, I'm so happy that David is here, unions, where I think there are associations of teachers with who are natural allies to this cause, and I think David's paper speaks to why from his own experience. And certainly families. And I think the work that the Center for Arts Education has been doing lately to develop advocacy around arts education in schools demonstrates the common cause can be built, hopefully, across class lines between the town that I live in, where people are worried as well about the arts being cut in tough budget times, and New York City parents, where they simply want to have the arts in their schools, and to begin to think about this broader movement. I think we have pieces of the movement, and I think if we are more intentional about how we put this movement together and recognize that it's a decades-long process as funders, perhaps we can get there. It's really interesting. I met Nick 10 years ago at a convening that was much like this. Nick, you may remember we were in Santa Monica. Right, yeah, with Paul Gorin and a bunch of other folks. And we've had iterations of this conversation. I think we're moving along in the conversation, but iterations of this conversation for some time. So the seeds of this movement have been laid, and the history that potentially can give rise to this movement is beginning to be built. So, so I would say, let's look at what it really takes to build such a movement and be honest with ourselves about the time and complexity of doing so. There's one other thing I wanted to say, and it really has to do, I think, with the commonalities in these papers. And I've alluded to a number of them already, but let me just mark them again. Arts education, like the education field generally, is, as Chris said, in a field of significant transition. And I think all the papers speak to this moment. I think Richard's paper in particular articulates the complexity of this moment. I think David's paper speaks to this evolving federal role that we're seeing and this increasing, creeping federal role in education. And all of us talk about new technologies, assessments, and accountability as places potentially where there's a lot of movement and energy, particularly around, I think, assessments, as people think about, you know, how do we really measure what matters for children right now? And the feds are putting money behind new assessment models through this Race to the Top program as potentially a space that we might want to explore. A second theme that I think was implicit in all of the papers is the fact that although arts education has been around for a long time, there's a kind of newness to the field, particularly around integration. And integration, of course, emerged much more forcefully, I think, in the last 30 years, in part as a response to the significant cuts that we've seen. But what does that mean for us as we think about building a field, potentially building a movement? What does this newness mean in terms of how we think about our strategies? And again, I would recommend that we be a little bit more intentional about looking at the fact that this is a nascent field that we're working in. And then finally, and this was a point I just mentioned a moment ago, this is largely a normative matter, as I say. It's also a political matter. It really revolves around, do we have the forces? Can we align the forces over a sustained period of time to bring about arts education in our schools, particularly, and this is a point I make in my paper, particularly for kids in cities. And I think that's a general theme across this convening. We do see arts education in the suburbs. We do see it in private schools. I do say in my paper, I really see the arts almost as a litmus test of privilege in our society. You know, the higher up you go in the sort of food chain of quality schooling, you go to Dalton or any of these kinds of places, it is taken for granted. There, it's taken for granted. In places like Hastings, where I live, it's there, but it's a little tenuous. And in New York City, it's New York City public schools, it's always a fight. It's always a fight just to see it. So, you know, so can we recognize that this is principally an equity issue as well, and can we build the sort of political momentum for a real movement? And I think that, again, is a big challenge, and we see it resonating in all of the papers as well. Let me stop there and welcome any conversation. I wish I had given more answers rather than providing so many questions. Thanks.